Welcome to Talaterra, a podcast about freelance educators working in natural resource fields and environmental education. Today, my guest is Janice Kelly, an independent and formal educator, author, and principal at Nature Detectives, an after-school enrichment program for children with curious minds and a love for problem solving. How did Janice create Nature Detectives? What does she do in this program? And what is the focus of her current book tour? Let's find out. Thank you, Janice, for your time this afternoon and for sharing your story with listeners for this podcast.
Thank you for inviting me.
I've been reading your writing about the Fair Oaks Bridge, which is the focus of your new book. And your writing is very thoughtful and very calming. And I can feel the world slow down as you focus on particular elements of what you're looking at. And I can tell that you observe the world in a very active way. So I suspect that your appreciation and love of nature goes back quite a ways. And so I would like to start our conversation by asking you this question. What is your first memory of enjoying the outdoors?
I used to play in my backyard a lot and swing on the swings. I rode my bike around the block, go on walks. I don't remember really how old I was, but I know I always liked being outdoors. We went camping a lot as I got a little older, and I was always walking and being outside. I never really thought of it as a vocation. I did know that I liked doing it.
So when did you realize that nature was important to you and that it could be your career?
That was not until 10 years ago, actually. When I want a break, when I really want to get away from the day-to-day life, I will take a drive. And in this particular day, I drove to Point Reyes in San Francisco Bay. And I was driving down the road. I took the exit off the freeway. And there was a creek by the road, and I had the windows open. I was listening to the creek. I stopped. I thought, I just want to listen to this. I wanted to just be part of that experience. I listened a while, and then after a time of enjoying that, I got in the car, and I saw the green hills, and I thought, what a miracle this is. This is beautiful. This is what I want to share and capture. And after that, I decided, okay, I really want to do environmental education. I want to do something that I can share this beauty of nature so people can appreciate and understand it. And so that was the beginning of my journey. I looked for resources to get educated in the topic so I could make a career out of it. I looked for work that gave me the opportunity to be working on the environment, and I progressed from there.
What were you doing then at this time?
I had been doing community outreach, a lot of writing. I had been doing some public relations work, and I decided that I really wanted to stop promoting everybody else's programs and do my own program. I wanted to be the leader of the program. And that was where I really found my joy. So I was fortunate that shortly after I had this experience of wanting to work on the environment, I became the Leaf Steward Program Coordinator for the Sacramento Tree Foundation. I was responsible for developing and implementing a volunteer program to train adults on aspects of urban forestry, planting a tree, leading a planting, understanding tree biology, And that was an 8-week program that I implemented. And we did that for 3 consecutive times. It won the Best Urban Forestry Training Program of the year that I did it. And it was one of my favorite jobs. I love the training element. I love meeting the people. I love creating the program. And after that, I went into graduate school to get my degree in recreation parks and tourism, a master's degree. So that opened up more opportunities for me because I worked with California State Parks and I worked on their state park brochures and a lot of research on different parks. And after I left state parks, I went to Sierra Nevada Conservancy and did more than 100 narratives on California historical landmarks. So I was still working on the tourism part of the work of getting people outdoors and understanding the destinations and the history. Then I did some field trip curriculum, which was really exciting for the John Muir National Historic Site, which was field trip stations, getting kids involved, teacher training. I created the field trip curriculum, and then I decided it was too good to sit in a file drawer, and I knew that they would use it. So I created a book. And so now that book is called Through the Eyes of John Muir, Practices in Environmental Stewardship. I was actually embarrassed the first time I went to the site because I didn't hardly know who John Muir was. And there I was talking with the experts at the site. Well, I learned a lot about him and created that project. And that actually gave me leverage to do another field trip curriculum project at the Lewis and Clark National Historical Park in Astoria, Oregon. That expanded my knowledge to archaeology and trade of the Native Americans, the Chinook people, and their culture. So that was really exciting to do. And since then, I've just been doing writing and later on started my blog, which turned into my book. And Nature Detectives was my way of applying my skills so that kids could really be involved in nature at school. They didn't necessarily have to go to the park to learn that there's nature. They could learn about it in their own campus after school.
That is fantastic. That is a lot of work. And that's amazing. It really is amazing that you wrote interpretive copy for 100 different sites.
And I've done some interpretive writing for interpretive panels for a couple of different, as a subcontractor for a couple of different interpretive planners. That's also been really good. So as projects come in, I do those things and enjoy it. Mm-hmm.
Then your clients have been interpretive planners. They've been historical sites. They've been schools as well.
Public agencies. I also worked with UC Davis to do a publication on invasive species, which I thought, I know nothing about this. So I did a lot of research on invasive species. And now every time I go to the bay, to the Embarcadero in San Francisco, and I look at the cargo ships, I look at them differently because now I know that they have so many invasive species coming into the port. Like, how is that affecting our bay? And I see that when I go out to the river, to the parkway, I can see plants growing that aren't supposed to be there. So the more you learn, the more you are attentive to the things that happen. And that's really what I've learned from my Mornings on Fair Oaks Bridge blogs. People say I take great pictures, and I'm very proud of that. I am lucky to be at the right place at the right time because I'm there often enough to see the interactions of the wildlife, to see when the egret arrives, very carefully walking the riverbank, very quiet, never makes a sound. And then suddenly the great blue heron will show up and squawking, and the egret instantly flies away. Like, I don't want anything to do with that. So I love those interactions of the ducks. And so I learn those things by being there regularly.
Yes. And, you know, that is one of my questions I had for you. You are there so often and you've documented it so well. What change have you seen over the 2 years? I understand it's 2 years that you've been doing writing about the bridge. Yeah. What change have you seen in those 2 years' time?
When I very first started in September of 2016 and through the fall, it was a pretty big salmon run, and I would see the fishermen catch the fish many times, and lots of fishermen. And I would see the salmon jumping and jumping and jumping. And then the next fall, it was not nearly as abundant because I didn't see hardly anybody actually catching fish. I know they did. They just may not have been doing it right there or when I was watching, but I didn't see as many come through. I didn't see as many jumping. Obviously, the beginning of 2017 was our serious flooding. So that changed the river a lot, overflowed the banks, overflowed the parkway. A lot of the waterfowl stayed away for months because it was too deep. They wanted to go to shallow water. So I see seasonal changes. But what I have noticed is that the salmon run is really the driving force for all the wildlife to come. And when there is less salmon, the wildlife are just not as plentiful. The first time I would watch the ducks feed in the channel, and I didn't see as many of them. I saw salmon. I just don't think there was quite as many. So those are things that I see over time. I mean, they could have been somewhere else. They just weren't where I was watching. And from a consistency standpoint, it was different.
Now, you've been having author events with your new book and book signings. Yes. So where have you been speaking about your book?
I was at the Fair Oaks Library on a Sunday, and I had about 15 people there, and I did readings of three of my entries of my book, and people really enjoy listening. They tell me that they can see the visual images when they close their eyes. They don't even have to see the picture. I spoke at the Sacramento Book Collectors Club the day before on Saturday, and they loved hearing about it. They were asking so many questions because they are very literary. So they were not only asking me questions about the experience and when did you start going and why, which is what I tell them to begin with. They also wanted to know, how did you put it together? How did you publish it? So people are really interested in why I do it and how I would ever get started in thinking about it. And often they ask me, aren't you afraid to be there by yourself? And I say, people are just not there at 6 o'clock in the morning. But I sold many books from there, and people are giving them as gifts. People are wanting them because they just want that experience. And I'm going to be speaking at Folsom REI in April and the Folsom Library in May. And I'm still looking for other places to speak. I just found out today that I'm going to have an event at the Avid Reader in Sacramento. I don't know when. So I'm continuing to looking for places to speak about it and read and share this abundant wildlife and this beautiful resource that we have right here in our neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very nice. You mentioned you were searching for places. Have you looked at the IndieBound website to look for the listing of the independent booksellers in your area?
No, I haven't done that, but I have looked, done a Google search of bookstores in the area and called many of them. And some are not a good fit. Some are used. And so I continue to search that. People have told me to try hotels or resorts as a place where people would be interested in reading, and I haven't yet tried that.
Yes, and conventions, people visiting the area, visitors bureaus.
Yeah, I haven't tried that yet. I'm still in the very early stages of developing readings for the book. So those are all good ideas.
Through your work, you strive to establish meaningful connections between people and place. And so how do you determine which connections to make? Of all the possible ways you can begin to tell a story, how do you narrow your focus? And what is your first step?
In telling a story?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I like to engage people. I like to ask them a question, because once you ask a person a question, it gives them an opportunity to share what it's special about that place for them. Have you been here before? What was it like? And then we can come up with the commonalities of, oh, okay, well, did you know that salmon come here through the fall? Or did you know that the turkey vultures are here, or that the coyote is attracted to the rabbits? And they usually have some kind of experience already. So that helps build the story, because once they're engaged, then it becomes more meaningful for them. I've showed the pictures from my book to my nature detectives, and they get really excited because it's the real thing. And I was just sharing a story last week about a bear encounter that my family had at Sequoia National Park. And it seems like many people have had bear encounters, and they all love to share their story. And that really gets them excited about being outdoors. Like, oh, whoa, wow. And then they really, it's suddenly, it's like, wow, that's really exciting.
Tell us about Nature Detectives. When did you launch this programming for schools, families, and cultural sites?
I started Nature Detectives in February of last year, 2018. It was a trial. I went to the school site, and she said, you know, I think we have a niche of parents that would think that this would really be something they want to do. Let's try it. So I created a flyer. We sent it out through the school distribution, and I got 16 kids, and they loved it. We were sharing wildlife and wild things. So I brought in seashells. I brought in pine cones. I brought in bear paw pictures so they could really draw and experiment. What did that look like and feel it? And they loved it. And so then I'm like, okay, what am I going to do next? What am I going to do the next month? I expanded to a second school. And then I actually had a third school for about a month. So I went all the way through the school year. And then I was doing some planning in the summer of how can I make this better? How can I improve the program? So I started in the fall with a couple of different schools. Now we do a fall program. So it's about trees, studying trees and habitat and the creatures that live in them. We get out our magnifying glasses and our tape measures, and they go study the outdoors from the tree bark to the grasses. We always have our nature detective field journals. That's a very important piece of the program because they love drawing and writing in their journals. They're very important. So we do a fall program that where they look at leaves and they draw leaves and oak galls and more pine cones, because it's a texture. It's something that's really interesting for them to see. Sometimes I pick them up around school campus. Sometimes I bring them. In the winter, we've done more quiet study. We've done listening. We've done rain sticks. We're going to do a blind walk tomorrow. It's a sensory walk. What can you feel? They've laid on their backs and put their finger up. And what are the sounds that you hear? Put up a finger when you hear a sound. So it's more quiet listening in the winter. And in the spring, we're going to do rebirth and bird's nests and pollination. So it's kind of getting back outside. I found that seasonal was a lot easier for them to do. And they love it. The parents love it. I take a lot of pictures and they pose and they have a great time.
Congratulations. That is success right out the gate.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah, they have a good time.
And how long are your programs? How long is each program?
It's 1 hour per week, and I do it now in 8-week segments. So it's fall for 8 weeks. Then I do a 2 or 3 week holiday. So there's holiday cards or nature gifts. Then I do 8 weeks for winter wisdom. And now I'm about ready to start, in a couple more weeks, the spring program, which will also be 8 weeks. So if there's any time left in the school year, we'll probably do some fun, bear encounters or getting ready for summer kind of thing. I found that 8 weeks is really a lot easier to blend a lot of diversity into it, storytelling, art, exploration. The parents like it that way, and it's easier for me. I can retain the kids over a period of time.
And all this happens within the classroom?
It happens on the school campus after school, either in their library or in a classroom, wherever they have an open space. But we are rarely inside. We usually are out. We are inside when it rains. In fact, it was a good time for us to be doing rain sticks because we were inside making our rain sticks. And then the following week, it was raining. And so we were simulating rain. And I brought in a balafone, which is an African version of a xylophone. And that was the background. And I was telling stories that were rain inspired. And so they were making rain. And it turned out to be a really fun activity for them.
On your website, you link to an article about how a doctor is now prescribing, and other doctors are prescribing nature as a prescription. And the doctor makes an interesting comment in this article where he mentions that a generation of kids don't know how to be outdoors. How does nature detectives teach kids how to be outdoors?
They are outdoors. They learn how to interact with it. They study the tree. They are running around. They study the grasses. They look at the insect. I've had them do mapping of an area, and they were so fascinated with the hole. It's like, look at the hole. And they put their arm all the way down the hole, and they go, how deep is it? And then we've done measuring the tree. And so they're very interested in measuring. How big is the tree? How big is the tree? And I said, okay, the tree's 48 inches around. How tall are you? How does that relate to how tall you are? And the more that they study the tree, the leaves, the insects, that gets them excited to do it more. And they're not sitting. They are active. They are running. They're not fearful. They're having fun. I am really not the lecturer. I'm not really the teacher. In Nature Detectives, I'm the facilitator that gives them the opportunity to explore and do what they do naturally. And the prescription for nature is really about getting outside for everyone because it reduces stress. it really addresses the problems of ADD children because they can focus on something that engages them. It lowers blood pressure. So those things are really measurable, and it actually can invoke a sense of peace for everyone if you are willing to put the time in. Not everybody wants to be outside, but there are benefits even for 5 minutes of just being out in the air and just feeling that. I started going to the bridge because I really wanted that feeling of peace in my life. I love the idea of watching the water. And then it came that, oh, I can write about this too. So it's really a dual purpose. Last night, I took a bike ride along the parkway. And whenever I see people stop and just watch the river, I say, oh, well, let me give you a gift. I give them my card and I say, if you're really enjoying the river, I love to share my blog with you because this gives you a lot more information, the narratives of different times and the photo and some photos and video. And you can enjoy this because you're already showing that you really enjoy it. And so I love to share that. And the kids just get really excited. They really love being outdoors. They literally love the exploration piece of it.
Yeah. And you mentioned that some people don't like being outside. And I've crossed paths with both adults and children who prefer to have nothing to do with the outdoors. I was wondering, with all the interaction that you have with people, what elements of nature create the most anxiety for children?
Well, some people are afraid of spiders. Some people are afraid of worms. They don't like to get dirty. And then some, that's why they go outside, because they get to see that stuff and they get to be dirty. So there are children that are really sensitive and loud noises bother them. Touch is really a difficult thing for them. And so in that case, it's a really slow initiation. Okay, you don't need to go out and run and play, but let's just come here and just feel the tree bark. Why don't we just see what that feels like? And that way it's safe. I'll go with them. I'll hold their hand. A lot of times the kids will say they will want me to hold their hand as they explore. Let's just feel the tree bark. Let's just look at the grass and see if there's something interesting in there. And where they can feel safe, they need to feel safe first. And maybe that's just, they just don't feel safe outside.
Where would you like to take the Nature Detectives program?
I would like to be able to present the Nature Detectives program for sites or nature centers or conservancies that don't have a program and they don't even know how to create one. I would love to be able to present this as a program turnkey. Here's what you need to do. It's very simple. It's very inexpensive. I'm still in the process of making it so that it is basically a downloadable item. I'm working on a leader's guide right now that will make it so that a site can say, okay, here's what I do week to week, and here's the supplies I need, and here's how I make it go. I would love to do that.
Is there anything else about Nature Detectives that you'd like listeners to know?
I think Nature Detectives is a lifestyle choice, and some parents don't really understand nature themselves. They don't understand what nature education is. They don't know how to interact with their children outside because they never had that education themselves. And I would love for people to think of Nature Detectives or any outdoor education program as a lifestyle choice, not just, oh, great, they're having fun for an hour. this week. Because when you just say, oh, it's an after-school program for an hour and they're done, that doesn't give an opportunity to open them up to support themselves when they're elsewhere. That's my answer. I like them to think of it as a lifestyle choice rather than a one-hour make-and-take kind of program. It really is a decision.
What do you think needs to happen for people to get that type of thinking into their normal daily life? And then what does Nature Detectives do now that opens the door to that happening just a little bit?
I can answer the second question much easier than the first. This program gives children the opportunity to explore without being graded, without being evaluated. They don't fill in worksheets. They do it all hands-on experience at their level of what they can do. Oftentimes they will say, can you help me spell this word? I don't know how to write that. And then I help them. So it's building their literacy skills and it's building their excitement because they're seeing things that's not part of their normal daily life. They may live in an apartment. They haven't seen a pine cone. They don't know what an oak gall is. And they certainly haven't seen feathers up close. So this gives them a real chance to see these things in their neighborhood that they may not have an opportunity to experience. And once they see it, they can get excited about it. And once they're excited, they can learn to appreciate it at other places and share that excitement with their parents or their other family members. And then it kind of builds. Hey, Mom, can we go out to the park? I want to study a tree. We felt the bark. We looked for insects. We measured. Come on, let's go measure. And that is what helps perpetuate it when they get excited and they want to share it with somebody else. And that's the same with the story. When they get excited about the story and then they want to share it with somebody else, then suddenly, oh, that's cool. Because I have had children hear a story and instantly they want to tell somebody else about it. And that's really exciting. The answer to the first question is, how do we change the minds? It's a long process because we have so many competing demands for our attention and our time. I think when people are personally affected by something, they start thinking a little differently. We had a lot of fires. We've had floods. And people are thinking a little differently about where they live and how they live. And they've been personally affected. They go, oh, I guess I'm going to have to change how I view things, how I do things, or I need to know more about the power of nature because we can't really control all of that. We can know about it. We can prepare for it. So, and being ethical about it, being caring about it, being ethical is really important because that leads us to preservation and stewardship and really caring for something. Not everybody is that way. And guiding people toward making better choices over time, I think, will be helpful. It's a long process. It's a relearning process. And the more connections you have with the outdoors or with people who love the outdoors, I think the faster that shift will happen.
Learn more about the Nature Detectives program, Janice's books, and her consulting work by visiting the show notes for this episode at talaterra.com.